Blog Talk Radio.
Hi. I'll start the show with a song. New you. It's being offered to connect a person to the real universes, the real universal guides. If a person practices or sings it for like 15 minutes before they go to sleep each night, and 15 minutes when they wake up in the morning or so, see what life shows you. The new presentation is being offered by Dwayne Hepner, and he's the author of the new books that are available at lulu.com, or if you get a hold of www.wonderfulworldwideeducators.com, you may be able to get PDFs of them. The new presentation has projects in development, like the All Solar Research Vessel and the Nations United Universal University and homeschooling. And everybody can become involved with it and see if it's something that makes sense in their lives. Today I'll read some of one of the new books. This is new book 5 of the Adventure Is series by Dwayne, the great writer. A new terminology must come about, which then creates a new position from which to work from. Instead of trying to redo what all the old timers will never budge from anyway. Even though religion speaks of their life, they really do not want any real truth or real light, as they are just fine with the candlelight and the old paintings of the eras of masterful artists. Because for them to have real freedom, they must in turn give or provide real freedom, which they definitely will not do. So, the words and their meaning have a real impact as they are brought forth, and especially with the real intent of the one providing the real connection. The words and labels once again take on their own life because the true reality deems it so. The world is filled with spiritual teachings and teachers who have brought about certain sectors for others. Each school of religious philosophy has their own line of gurus, who then provide their followers with an enlightenment from their experiences and knowledge, of which none has anything to do with the all is. Some are better than others. But our focus is direct, and theirs is more roundabout. They have their own course, which will mean more lifetimes to try and find the real guide. Until a person is ready, they will not recognize the real guides. So, our position is the most challenging and adventuresome. In a world that has proven it has had no preparation for something real. So, here again is where you will first come in, Paul, as you will provide the preparation for future students to recognize the one who will bring in the final of what has been in the works for lifetime. This is why, from what I am sharing with you now, you will be the living master and set up the beginning, as this will be the preparation many are looking for, said Rebazar as Ursha. then shut off the screen. We will take a break from this for now. I have something really interesting to show you next, which will be tomorrow night. So let's go play in the water for now. She said, as we left the saucer and swam underwater. We swam to the surface, and to my surprise, there was a small island all by itself in the middle of the ocean. I was wondering where I was at as Lou began to laugh. Where are we? I asked. You will see, so follow me, she said as we swam over to the little island. This little place out in the middle of nowhere was about as big as a couple of football fields. It had a cluster of luscious palm trees in the middle, with a sandy beach all around. We went onto the shore and sat in the sand. Do you like this place? I made it just for us, she said as she smiled. Really? How did you make it? I asked. It's not really that hard, for me that is. I have a strong imagination, plus the fact I use certain functions with the view to make it all so realistic. I did good, didn't I? She said as she laughed. This is a great idea. Did you make a great surfing break for us? I asked. Oh, yes, it's on the other side of the island. It's a perfect right, just for us, she said. Could I live here and never go back to Earth again? I asked. That would be too easy, Dwayne. You have a lot to do with your books, and the Earth world is waiting for you, she said. This place is like Never Never Land, and I could be Peter Pan, you could be Tinkerbell, and we could surf and play with the dolphins all the time. I really like that idea, I said as Ursa laughed. You have to do the job you accepted first, then we will be free to do whatever we want. Forever, she said. I know, I don't mind. I just like to dream of being free from the body permanently, I said. This life for you will go very fast. Then we will be together in worlds and universes so much better than this one, she said as we got up and walked to the other side of the island. Ursa and I surfed for the longest time and sat on the beach. She told me so many wonderful things about the places we have been while I was young and still unaware of them. I never ceased to be amazed at her wonderfulness. Scene 18. From that scene with Ursa Lu on the island, I moved into the present. So during the middle of the next night, while I was having a meeting with some of the new students in the real side, Ursa came along as I was just finishing and about to leave. I introduced her to them. They were so amazed that she existed. Then we said our goodbyes and left. Hello, Dwayne. Let's go to my place and have some fun, she said as we went to one of the tropical islands we like to go to. We flew over the big blue ocean to a beautiful island where we had built a good-sized treehouse. We landed on the balcony and then went inside. Lay down on the bed. I have something very special for you, she said as she went into another little room for a moment and came out with something behind her back. Do I have to close my eyes? I asked. Ha ha, no, silly. Look what I have, she said as she handed me a remote control device. I looked it over and immediately knew what to do. As I pushed one of the bigger buttons and a large hanging tapestry on the wall in front of the bed opened up like at a movie theater. Now turn on The View. Let's have some fun tonight, she said as she laid beside me. What is the movie for tonight, miss? I asked. The boring Gerald without crony show, he said, as we both laughed and laughed. Oh, not again? Is there no end to him? I asked. Oh, yes. This is where he ends up. You will see. So let's get started. This is what The View is showing now. But the future can always change. And you know how Gerald is, stuck in his own tap-lined rut, she said as she took the controls and pushed the button as the opening scene came forth. The scene moved across the terrain to the corporation office with an aerial view of the entire property. It slowly swept down to the entrance of the building. Then inside, as it went through the hallways past all the offices, until it came to where Gerald, all by himself, was sitting and looking at his computer. As he was reading something from the screen, there softly appeared several very tall, dark, hooded characters behind him, whom he did not notice. I suddenly got a strong impression that they were agents of the Karmic Lord from the astral worlds. You are very perceptive, Gawain. These are the agents of the Lords of Karma from the lower part of the astral region. Gerald's time is up, as he has played his last performance on the physical plane for now, she said, as one of the dark hooded agents touched Gerald's shoulder. Gerald grabbed his left arm as though he were going into shock, then tried to get up and fell back into the chair. I could see him trying to say something, maybe try and call for help, but there were no sounds coming from him. He struggled for a moment, then gave in, as he gently fell back and sprawled himself with the chair. I could see the dark agent lift him from his body as he then stood next to them. Took a few moments before he realized what had happened, as he looked for the longest time at his body in the chair. It was rather curious to watch his expression, as he knew it was his body, but still wondering what had just happened. Then he slowly looked up at the dark, faceless figures. He tried to scream, but again, there was no sound coming from him. He tried to run, but it was as though he were suspended in time as the dark figures grabbed him by each arm and lifted him from the floor. As they held him, he began to shrink in stature, like one of the many experiences I saw him as about 3 feet tall and wearing adult clothing that was far too big for him. Gerald began to kick and struggle the best he could, but it was also useless. I was getting a variety of impressions as I watched the scene play out, as he was now caught for all he has done. Gerald is not a bad person. It's just that he didn't listen to Rivazar and the real guy. First of all, when he took on Crony as his new wife, then when he was to announce me, which at that time, the boys wanted me to tell the world that I was the new master. Then, the challenge of letting the corp membership and the world know I had the real position was just that. And it would be that Gerald and Crony would keep the membership right where they are today. Even though the boys came to you and signified that you were to step up and let the world know who you are, they knew that Gerald was not going to let you go, and especially Crony. Gerald likes being the master, and it is all so for him. But he didn't keep an eye on what Crony and her cohorts were doing. It was his position to oversee everything, including the safety of the membership. But he was too much into himself, just like Durwood. We have gone over this many times, and you know the reasoning behind all of it, and that is, so it is a great comparison for those who want to discover the true reality, the all is. Durwood and Gerald, and of course, especially along with Crony, has pointed everyone to the ancient gods, plus the fact of how they have tap-lined everyone's will to their purpose of supporting what the Callum god wants, he and his mistress, the influence. What they have done without their knowledge is create a very good comparison to what you are presenting now, Dwayne, and so we shall see who wakes up to the new nowness of the true reality, the all is. As for Gerald, it is all coming clear to him what he decided way back when he was supposed to announce you. Every moment from that time is flooding through him right now, as you can see from the indicators on the view. From then to now, it's all been a flash for him. He sees everything so much clearer. You will like this adventure to write about, Dwayne, she said. I really laughed with her at how she said that. I could see what Ursha was saying and how Durwood and Gerald have bowed to the Callum God, his control of the religious orders on the earth and up into the mental realm. This new book, it's very revealing for the humans of Earth, because it is time for people to know what has been taking place on all levels, and with the systems and institutions that have been created to be of a so-called divine nature. All of what has taken place on the Earth is a process, and the ancientness of the old scriptures and their saviors is way outdated, far in the past. This is what Paul tried to tell people about what they are still praying to and worshiping and looking to the ideas of past personalities. My real position is not about my personality. It is all about the new wave of the all is. The focus is many times on Gerald and Durwood, because they were entrusted by the real guides to provide a real service and not just keep people passive to the old ways they should be freeing themselves from. Of course, I will look like and be labeled as the bad guy for all this so-called preposterous stuff about the two most benevolent masters ever. I am fine with what they have done. I would not want their positions at all, because I like being the surfer and having my friend Ursha, who has taught me so much. We continue to watch as the dark hombres did their duty. The tall, dark, hooded figures moved forward, and as they did, the surroundings changed. They went through the multiple layers of dimensional levels that separate the hardness of the physical realm from the many areas of the astral world. As they moved along, they soon came to what I call the gray area, where I could see millions upon millions of lost and desperate souls hanging around. As they took Gerald through all the gloomy grayness, which was like a fog hanging on everything, they moved along into a vague clearing, soon became very apparent. Gerald then became adamantly resistant, wrestling and struggling to get away from his captors, which was also useless. As he saw the huge dark stone-like stairway leading up to a giant government-type building, I was in awe of the medieval appearance of the place. It was an ominous structure, more so than the IRS building on the physical plane. The two holding Gerald began to walk up the long flight of steep stairs in a slow and casual procession, as there were other dark figures who followed behind. About halfway up, Gerald finally calmed down as he had to be dragged the rest of the way. Finally, at the top, the giant doors leading to the entrance automatically opened by themselves as all of them went inside. What a scene. I am sweating just watching this. Is this your idea of a seductive torture? I said as we laughed. Of course, all of this sets the mood for your lifestyle as the new man, the most controversial man alive. Do you like it so far? She asked as we laughed and laughed. It's my kind of danger, but I can see it's not really for Gerald, as he is more the office boy type for now, I said. The scene was now inside, in what would definitely be a gigantic courtroom. The view was from the far side of the room, looking at the main doors as they opened. While Gerald was drug in and moved up the walkway to the judge's huge podium setting, then the view moved over to the side of the room as I could see the hooded figures drop Gerald on the floor, then step back. The scene was a perfect view of Gerald struggling on the floor to get up as the dark hooded judge looked down upon him from his lofty position behind a huge desk-like structure. It looked to be 50 feet high. Everyone looking on seemed to be so patient with what Gerald was doing with himself on the floor. Of course they are. They have nothing better to do for eternity than to play their little official games of cat and mouse with all the unaware souls who have come to them. Gerald could have been fine, and he listened to the real guys, but he wanted things his way instead of helping the membership to a better expansion of themselves, said Lou. He loves his crony. She loved what she could get. So where is she in all of this? I asked. Her time on Earth is not up yet because there is still a lot more to her story. She now will have the complete control of the membership she has always wanted. We will take a look in on her and how happy she is that Gerald is finally out of her life for good. And we will go over what will take place later with her. Watch, you will like the rest of this, he said. After a long and strange look, looking down on at Gerald, the judge finally spoke. Do you have your counsel with you, Gerald? Asked the dark judge in a rather loud voice. Gerald was still struggling and whining on the floor. Where am I? What happened to me? He said in a slurring voice. He tried to get up, but kept tripping on his long pants and slipping in his own slobber. You are in your final days of judgment, Gerald. Didn't you read your Bible before you came here, said the dark judge. What? What Bible? I haven't read the Bible in years, said Gerald as he grabbed the arm of a chair and finally lifted himself up and sat in it, still drooling on himself. Then the dark judge slammed his huge hammer onto his desk and said, you blasphemous wretch. You have profaned this court and its good name, and for that you will be given the maximum sentence. You profane to be a religious man while on earth, and have given yourself into the hands of the Almighty. And so now you are where you decided to be, aren't you? Said the judge as he waited for Gerald to speak. Wow, this is getting heavy, I said. Gerald was going to get the max anyhow. Judge is just having fun with him, said Lou. sentenced for what? For being a religious man of God, asked Gerald as he wiped his face and began to focus on the judge far above him. Then, as Gerald began to look around, he soon realized the impact of where he was, as it was all coming rather clear to him now. He gathered up all his strength and stood up and tried to move past his seat, but he couldn't. He was stuck to the very spot he was in, as though he had planned it. Sit down, Gerald, and be judged, said the dark judge, as he once again slammed his hammer down. No, not for being a religious man, but for being the fool. I'm looking at your history with the corporation. Isn't it so that you were supposed to have complete control over all the affairs that were to take place? But I see that you decided to leave your first wife and let another woman come in and begin control everything right under your nose. Isn't that so, Gerald? Gerald felt the vibrations of the sound of the judge's voice. And as he looked at the tall, hooded figures who were between him and the entrance doors, Gerald slowly sat back down. She said she loved me and that she would help me because it became such a huge task to handle the corporation. I knew I could trust her, and she has done wonders, said Gerald as he looked around for a way out. She loved you. That is an old and sweet story. She still took you, along with everyone else, even if I could see that from where I am. I will ask you again, Gerald, do you have counsel? The dark judge asked the dark judge in a commanding voice. Gerald looked at the dark judge with his puppy dog eyes and with a rather mopey look on his face. Then slowly asked, do I need counsel, sir? Of course not, Gerald. You can be totally stupid all on your own, or you can have someone help you with it. Which do you prefer? Asked the dark judge as he kind of snickered. Then Gerald began to snicker a bit with a type of sarcastic giggle, then laughed uproariously loud. Who and what are you, some kind of madman? Asked Gerald as he was beginning to come around to what was taking place. The dark judge immediately slammed his hammer so hard that the entrance doors actually broke away and flew down the stairway leading to the courthouse. It's been a while since I have done that, said the dark judge. Gerald immediately sat straight up in his seat. Gerald was now breathing very hard as the impact of where he was at began to pour into him. I could sense in his little mind he really did not want to believe he was where he was. It was no longer a bad dream, but a living nightmare. From the hood of the dark judge, I could see red steam coming out. The view was not showing the face of the judge. I could only see the side view and his hood. You don't want to see the dark judge, Dwayne. He is very grotesque at this point, said Ursa. Gerald finally spoke and asked, what do I do? Don't know what to do, he said in a very sorrowful manner. Why, my dear boy, you confess, of course. Remember, just like in Sunday school, said the dark judge as he waited ever so patiently for Gerald's reply. Gerald began to fudge around in his chair and tried to get up, but found that he was now stuck to it. The idea was there was no longer anywhere to run and hide. He began to play with his hands and rub them very nervously together. There was still steam coming from the hood of the dark judge. He yelled at Gerald, well, will you confess? Gerald was still reluctant to say anything. He kept trying to avoid the confrontation of the situation. Guards, take Gerald to the bottomless pit. Throw him in, screamed the dark judge. The hooded guards came over to Gerald and grabbed his arms. No, no, wait. I will confess. I will. I will. Please don't take me anywhere, please. He pleaded as he began to furiously cry. The dark judge was no longer steaming as he waited patiently for Gerald to speak. Let me help you remember and start your new performance in this courtroom. Gerald, I have your life's transcripts in front of me, said the judge as he held up a book twice as thick as a phone book. Both his hands. He slammed it on his desk. The dust flew everywhere, and several bats actually flew from the pages. Is that really about me? Asked Gerald, with his eyes wide open in amazement. I don't see anyone else in the room, do you? Asked the dark judge. The dark hooded guard began to laugh. So, Gerald, let it all out. You will feel better. I promise you will. Said the dark judge, as Gerald finally started what would become a historic event for all to hear and read. I was born in a humble family, too, Gerald was trying to explain. No, no, not that far back, you dweeb. Let's get to the juicy parts where you decided to turn from your compassion and human destiny and proclaimed yourself king. I already know all about your life as a strange little you. Now I want you to tell me about what made you change from a humanitarian into a little devil, asked the dark judge. Instantly, Gerald began to squirm again. It is no use to resist, Gerald. We are all going nowhere until you confess, because here there is no time, and it will seem as though you will sit in that chair forever, unless you confess everything. Isn't that what you made your bowing membership do for you? They gave you everything they had, and what did you give them in return? More old sermons to live by, so you and your cohorts could subliminally hold them to worlds of phenomena you had built just for them. Now get on with it, before I really lose my patience. Said the dark judge, he slammed his hand on the open book in front of him. A sudden flash of realization hit Gerald. I could see the indicators on the view. You mean when I met Crony, he said as he looked at the judge for a response. Very good, little man. Now you are seeing the light, my boy. What inkling there is of it in you, said the dark judge. Gerald began to explain how he met Crony in the physical, and at the same time, the dark judge also filled some events in for Gerald, telling him how Crony was a setup for him from day one. After a short time, the judge interrupted Gerald. This is where you are going to need counsel, Gerald, and I have just the man for you, said the dark judge, as he waved to the hooded guard. From the far side of the room, another very large door opened. Then, even to my surprise, Durwood walked out and over to where Gerald was. Your counsel, Gerald, as I know you two have met before and have a lot to talk about, said the dark judge. As he let out one of those morbid laughs one would hear in a horror movie from the starring monster. Hello, Gerald. Welcome to the dark side, said Durwood as he sat next to Gerald and put his arm around him. Gerald pushed his arm away as Durwood laughed it off. The view was indicating that Durwood had already made his deal with the Callum God and the lower lords of karma for honoring it. They now had Gerald as their new pigeon. It's getting to be my nap time. But in this world, I really do not take naps, so I suggested Duluth. Can we take a break from this and go surfing, Miss? I asked. Of course we can. Let's fly down to the beach and play in the water, she said. We got up and flew from the balcony. The surf was always good on this hidden island of ours. Lou wore her scanty suit as usual, just to tease me. We grabbed our boards from the beach hut and paddled out into the clear turquoise blue water. I could see groups of colorful golden fish and giant sea turtles swimming all around us. This place, like so many others we go to, is a real-side fairyland of wonderful amazement. We reached the outside break, sat on our boards watching the outside sets roll in. You didn't comment on my new suit, Elaine, said Lou as she smiled at me. I thought that was the one you wore the last time we were here, I said as I giggled. No, this is a new one I made just for Gerald's passing, she said, and she really began to laugh, and so did I. That was a Gerald joke, right? I asked. Of course, silly, she said as she splashed. Do you see Crony ever wearing a suit like that for Gerald? I said as I smiled. Ha, I don't think so. I haven't even seen her outside of her office outfit. Seems to be glued to her. Well, I'm sure she wears pajamas to bed, doesn't she? I asked. I'm not sure. Let's check and see when we get back. Anyhow, what about my new suit? I made it just for this trip. Do you like it? She asked. It's very revealing and alarming, miss. And so far, my books are rated PG, so I do not have a lot to say about your new suit until possibly the next book, I said as I laughed. I know you like it, she said as she splashed me and paddled out through a wave. I was laughing all the way out as I followed her. She caught the first big wave, and I caught the one right after her. As soon as we stood up, more than a dozen dolphins came to the surface and jumped through the waves with us. We stayed out for what seemed to be hours, then rode the last wave in on my board together. As we walked on the shore, then she turned and kissed me. We are really good for each other, Duane. Heather is lost to the earth for many lifetimes. Just us now, she said as she looked at me. You are right, miss. We are perfect together, I said as we flew back to the treehouse. Okay, really fast. Let's see what Crony wears to bed, I said as we opened the scene on the view as Crony was in her room and getting ready to go to sleep. Look, I told you so. Her pajamas look like her work clothes, said Hersha as we laughed. Then she changed the scene back to the courthouse. As the courthouse scene opened, the dark judge was telling Gerald to stand up while he confessed. As long as you have brought Durwood here, I may as well tell everything, he said with a sigh of remorse. That would be mighty white of you, Master Gerald, because it may help you get through the next 30 or so lifetimes, said the dark judge. Gerald looked really forlorn. As you already know, Durwood was originally asked to be a caretaker for the membership, but he was given the opportunity by Paul and Rebazar, so the rest of the masters agreed. He did start off okay and wanted to be helpful, but he fell in love with his position and popularity. When I was to take over, he didn't want to go and announce me. So it took us a while to figure something out. But we decided to buy the membership the best we could and at the same time not let anyone else know. But Crony knew. She already knew how Durwood was. She wanted in on everything. We wanted it to all look justifiably real. So we even created the legal end of it to make it all look so convincing. So it was told to the membership that Durwood stole the membership list and that he also took a lot of power with him. This would create confusion amongst the membership. Some of them would not know who to believe. Some would follow Durwood, which was the plan. We wanted at least a good part of them, or he was not going to announce me as the living master, said Gerald. There is something I am looking at here in the book, Gerald. What were you told by the master prior to your taking over the corporation? Asked the dark judge. Gerald fidgeted a bit and said, when I was offered the master position, I was told there would be another one after me, the one who would be the real one. At the time they told me this, I thought it was just a test of sorts, and so, as the years passed, I sort of forgot about it, said Gerald. And I'm looking at the records here, Gerald. Isn't it so that you and Durwood both took on the title of what Paul Twitchell termed as the Ma? Asked the dark judge. Yes, we both figured it was what Paul wanted. He taught both of us, so we took his title for ourselves, said Gerald. Well, Gerald, from what I am reading here, the masters tried to tell you to establish your own position, but you and Durwood were in such a hurry to be on top and rule your kingdom, and so the both of you stole the title for yourselves. You never obtained the same real position as had Paul. Isn't that correct? Asked the dark judge. Gerald reluctantly said, yes, that is so. Tell me about the religious idea, asked the dark judge. Durwood privately told me that he decided to make the corporation a religion because there were many more advantages to the business end, and that with a non-profit status, the membership would be willing to donate more money. When I was a member and Durwood made the corporation a religion, I was a little apprehensive at first, but at the time he was the master, and what he decided became the way things would be. When I took over, part of our deal was to keep the corporation a religion, because Durwood wanted a percentage of the profits as long as he was on Earth. So I had to agree, said Gerald as he fidgeted a bit. No, you didn't have to agree, Gerald, but you decided to because of Cone, who was very adamant with you about keeping the corporation a religion. At the time, you did not see she was taken over by the influence, and that the Earth and most of the rock worlds are ruled by the religious factions, but she could not, but she could see the future and the advantages of being a religion. You no longer have to be concerned for your mate. She will be here soon, and her lifetimes will be even more. Now for Crony. I want you to tell me about her involvement in your own words, asked the dark judge. Crony was part of the deal. If she knew everything, or she was going to tell the membership and those who were the board of directors at the time. So, under duress, I had to agree to her to become my new wife, and so we were married. After all the deal was settled, I was so relieved, because I just wanted to teach the membership. But as our marriage continued, Tony became very demanding and controlling. He had read all of Paul's books, decided there was too much truth in some of them, and wanted certain books to be discontinued. Did not like the idea. She would constantly blackmail me with her persuasiveness. Now I really felt trapped. Just wanted to be the master, and at the same time, had to let her edit what I was writing. She even gave me notes to read on stage so that I would say what she wanted me to say. As the years passed, I felt like a dog on a leash. And I constantly had dreams where Crony was pulling me on a leash as I was down on all fours crawling behind her, said Gerald, and he began to cry openly. Did you ever consider listening to the real guys? Gerald asked the dark judge. After a while, it didn't matter anymore. So I really thought I could in some way get things straightened out. I soon realized it would never happen, so I went along with everything Phony wanted. As the years passed, I felt good about the fact that we were getting a lot more members, so life was good. Then, one night in the beginning of 2001, Ray Bazaar, Paul, and Yabo came into my room while I was asleep and woke me up. They told me to pay attention. They removed me from my body and took me above my house. Then all of us flew to the other side of the earth and to a place I recognized as where the rod of power was passed. When I first saw where we were, I felt so good as I had never had experience with the rod of power. We landed on the outskirts of the area as it was solid dark, except for the bright stars above and the moon was totally full. I could plainly see the reflective outlining shadows of the terrain, with all the characteristics of this awesome place. Novel motion for me to put my attention in the center of the area. And as I did, there became a small cluster of lights, like little fairies flying about. Then, suddenly from the sky, there was a shaft of light starting to form. And as it did, it came all the way down to the surface and so magnificently spread itself outward. It was a huge, brilliant shaft of purest light. I got the impression from Yabo that the rod of power is always here because of Rebazar and the guides, and that it was that I could not see it because of how I had blocked myself off from it. I became very excited as I watched the huge splendor of the light splash all around the entire area. From all the years I felt so trapped by Kony, I now felt so relieved as I felt this was my moment of really getting the rod of power. The huge shaft of brilliant light then stabilized into a continuous flow like a giant waterfall. I was mesmerized by its presence. Then Rebazar spoke to me in impression. The true reality as it is, you are among the privileged to see this wondrous spectacle, said Rebazar. As soon as he said what he did, I realized I had never heard the term true reality before. As I was about to question his reference, I suddenly saw thousands of illuminated beings appear around the center of the main shaft of light. I looked at Rebazar, Paul, and Yabo, as they then turned from me and walked toward the center of the light. As I stood there watching them get closer, Paul stopped for a moment, then turned and waved as though he were saying goodbye. I was perplexed for a moment as they finally reached the light, so I ran after them. As I got closer, it became difficult for me to get too close. I could see them as they were with all the other masters. Then I noticed a central figure, someone I didn't recognize. Suddenly, all of them motioned with their outstretched arms and hands to the person standing in the center of the light. I tried to see who it was, but the light was too bright. Then I tried to move closer, but something was not allowing me to. So I stood my ground. As I tried again, I suddenly felt a huge remorse come over me that I had missed my opportunity to be part of this beautiful event. The light became so intense from then on that I had to shield myself from it as I fell to my knees and began to cry with my face in my hands as my arms held to the ground. In a matter of moments, I was back in my body and actually crying in my bed, said Gerald as he sat down with his emotional strain. There was a part of you that knew who was standing in the center of the light, wasn't there, Gerald, asked the dark judge. Later on, I did realize who it was, but Greta's arm hall came around for months with the person who was in the center of the light. I didn't want to even admit it to myself. I was very discouraged for the longest time, and even Phony could tell. I didn't want to continue with being the master at time, and I told her so. But she insisted and said if I didn't continue to play the part, my life would become nothing. What she was really saying is that her life would become nothing. As I could read her so clearly now from all the years we had been together. I finally told her who it was in the light. So she looked him up on the membership. When she found who it was, she said she would take care of everything. And I knew what she meant. She would have Jake do her dirty work, said Gerald as he pouted with himself. Tony never told you about her dream experiences with Dwayne. But to that point, did she? God said, no, it wasn't till Dwayne later on started to fax the office that she became very upset and began to angrily blurt out what she knew about him. I knew something was coming. It was now June 2001. I had been watching my dream experiences. Most of them were very shattered and evasive. Then one night, I remember it well, because of what I had done that day. Rebazar, Paul, and Yabel returned and took me with them. Then we were soon on the playing field in a huge round stadium. This place was bigger than anything I had ever seen. There must have been 50 levels to the seating arrangements that looked to be thousands of feet high. All four of us stood in the middle of the field. I could see that all of the stands were completely full. There was an ominous silence about the place. As Rebazar, Paul, then Yabel shook my hand. They one by one disappeared. Suddenly, everyone began to cheer and applaud from the stands. I felt so relieved as though I had completed my mission. And as I was watching all the people in the stands and waving to them, I saw a figure of a man come from the other side of the field. As everyone then stood up and cheered so loud, I had to hold my hands over my ears. Suddenly, it's like the 4th of July. There were awesome fireworks in the sky going off, one right after the other. The crowd was jumping up and down, and I could feel the vibrations of the sound of their bodies hitting the flooring and resonating throughout the stadium. I was now beside myself. The man came right up to me and put out his hand, but at first I was reluctant to shake hands, as I knew this man I was out, and he was in. He stood there with his hand out, and I finally did shake hands with him, as I then fell to my knees because I felt so weak. Then he said, "It's okay, Gerald, all you have to do is let go and do your part. You will be fine," he said. Then I woke up in a complete sweat. I looked over the entire experience and realized all the applause was for him and not for me. I became very depressed. I never told Crony about the experience as I knew something was coming, but I didn't know when. I now felt older and worn out, but I had to stay alert with all of this because I had been the master for 20 years and I didn't want to just give it all up. I was hoping in my mind that what I had experienced was in the other world. And what I had built the corporation into would be fine with me. Then, the 1st of August came around. As I always remember the 1st of each month, I was suddenly in an experience with Rebazar, Paul, and Yabel again. I was sitting in a chair in a dark room, and there was a spotlight on me. One of those interrogating rooms police use. The scene looked to be the same, First, the three of them just stood and looked at me. The funny thing about the experience was they were all smoking, which to me meant some kind of bad habit. Then their appearances changed into more brutally rugged-looking forms. As they began to question me about all the years I had listened to Crone, they referred to her as my Crone. One by one, they began to hammer me with all types of questions and accusations. It seemed to be for hours, going on and on with the same drilling routine. After a while, I began to scream. So they began to scream even louder at me. One by one, they said the same thing over and over. You are going to give in, Gerald. You are going to quit. Then you will announce a new man who took care of you with Durwood. You are going to do this, right? This is all they were saying. You are going to give in, Gerald. You are going to quit. And if it wasn't enough, after hours of listening to them, hordes of others who were smoking cigarettes came into the room and started screaming the same words at me. Until I felt I was going mad, and I suddenly woke up yelling. But I woke up, false awakening, because I was still out of my body in a place that looked similar to my room, and it wasn't. It was a dark place with nothing anywhere. I knew this is where I would someday end up. I didn't want it to be now. So I willed myself back into my body and finally woke up, said Gerald. He was wet from all his sweat. Then came the passing of the rod of power on August 3rd, 2001. Right, Gerald? Asked the dark judge. Yes, sir. Right after I went to sleep the night before, I was suddenly somewhere outdoors in a beautiful rolling hill setting. I was on a hill overlooking a lovely valley that led up to a more green-covered rolling hills. Then I heard a truck pull up. As I turned, I saw a big white truck with the lane in it. He got out, and I walked over to him. The first thing I said was that I never really paid much attention to all the creative things he had done for the corporation. Then I pointed to my ears, which were now flat against my head, told him the masters had given me a real talking to. We shook hands, and I turned and walked toward Crone, who I suddenly saw was being held up by a sultry woman all dressed in black. Same instant, noticed Paul standing by himself, and in the background with Rebazar and Yavel, along with a huge number of the masters. Didn't think anything of it at the time, but walked over to Crone and the lady in black. This woman had a big smile on her face with her stunning red lips as she stared directly at me. Didn't think anything of her being there. All of us walked off together, and just as we did, I heard the voice behind me say, "You got it." There was a flash of huge light, which I briefly turned to look at, but it was far too bright to stare into. Then it was back in my body. When I woke up, I thought about the woman in black more than anything. I had never seen her before, said Gerald. Of course you didn't recognize her, Gerald, even though you had been living with her for almost 20 years, said the dark judge. He and Durwood both laughed out loud, along with the hooded guards. So I now knew my time was up, that what I had been experiencing was real. I later told Crone, she became rather enraged. Told me very adamantly that I had better not say anything to anybody ever. From that day on, my life was like holding my breath. I felt as though the floor was going to give way any minute. Then one day, Duane started faxing the office, which really upset Crone. So she put everything on guard that Duane had flipped out. So she put everyone on guard that Duane had flipped out. I don't know if she had said that directly, but everyone was alerted. Finally, Coney had Jake send Duane a few letters, then the final one where he was excommunicated. He even told the lawyers to notify him to stay away. He was now thrown out of the corporation and banned from the seminars or he would be arrested, said Gerald as he looked very pale and weak. And all for him simply telling the truth. How amazing is the great business world of the earth, isn't it, Gerald? Did you ever go over how many years of service and all the money Duane gave to the corporation? Asked the dark judge. I knew about it, but I didn't want to step down. Figured I had built the corporation, and it was now mine, but I knew it was really Cronin's. Once more, I was trapped, even more so than before. So I totally rebelled and became very arrogant about the whole scene the masters had put me through. My life was now set, so I was going for it, just like Derwood did, said Gerald, and he meekly looked up at the judge. Tell me about the experience you've had where you had a dream with Derwood and the lady in black, asked the judge. After that day, Duane was given the rod of power from Paul, and I had witnessed this lady in black. I started to notice her in my dreams more often. Then, as I looked back, I began to remember her being in many of them over the years. She was much more disguised than hers. Then one day, in one of my experiences, Derwood came in with her. They were holding hands like lovers. Derwood began to explain their relationship and who she was. He said that she had taken over Crony even before Crony had met her. That experience, along with others, sealed my fate. I had nowhere to go to go along with everything, said Gerald. Actually, you did not have the courage to do anything real. As you could have stood up with the real guys and told everything what really happened, Gerald, but you didn't have the guts to do so. You sealed your own fate, not because of all those around you, but because you really wanted to be the little king, didn't you? Didn't you? Gerald yelled the black judge. Gerald finally stood up again and yelled. Yes, I did. I loved it. I was tired of thought of as the office boy. I loved being worshipped, just like Derwood did. I wanted what he had where everyone loved him. Grew up as a lonely child and was made fun of because of my big ears and I was always so skinny. All my life I wanted something for me. It was my chance. And then when Crony came along with her alluring nature, I totally lost sight of my wife. Now it seemed like everything was finally coming together. Everything was to be so perfect. It seemed like Crony really cared for the membership. I was the master, and it all fit so well, said Gerald, as he calmed down and sat in his seat. That's my boy. You're doing great, said Gerald, as he patted Gerald on the back. Suddenly, I was watching the view. I could see Gerald's face rather transform into a more rubbery character, like that of Gollum, in the Lord of the Rings, and he began to speak again. Then he came along. Why did he have to come along? I was so happy before he was there. I had my corporation. I had my crony. I had the worshiping membership. I had everything I could ever dream of. But then he came along and ruined everything. It was him. He did it. Even though she didn't really love me like I wanted, at least she was there with me. I want it all back, and I want it now. I want what I had, because it's all mine. Do you hear me? I want it back right now. Give it to me. Give me back what I want, yelled Gerald, as he stood up and threw his arms about and pushed Derwood aside. That was some of what Duane the Great Writer wrote in New Book 5 of the Adventure Is series. About the corporation called Ekincar. So, no coincidences if you're hearing these words being offered this guidance to a real education, real guidance, real education. And then new presentation. Test it for yourself. Start by singing the new you song. See what life shows you. I will be on Blog Talk Radio next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time. See ya.